Unit 3. Reading the passage.
Stolen Friendship. Mark Tyler was grateful for the shelter of his nephew's home, and he tried to show his gratitude. He liked to be outdoors, and so he kept the flower beds in meticulous order, even though kneeling was difficult, and getting up was even more so. And when Lucy, his nephew's wife, stayed at her clubs or charity committee meetings, Mark would have the table set and dinner half going. At such times, Lucy would rush in breathlessly and say, "Uncle Mark, you're a darling!" All evening, the glow of her words would warm his heart. He was old and his hair was silver gray, but his eyes were still an unfaded blue in his sun-bronzed face, and his understanding was keen and intuitive. He respected Lucy's wish to have every chair and vase just so, every flower and shrub tended properly. John and Lucy had no children, but they were constantly busy with business and social activities. This, Mark knew, was an unconscious effort to fill in the empty spot in their lives. He was well aware that their hearts were big, or they'd never have taken him into their home. So he was shyly eager to please, humbly happy, when they took note of him, careful not to intrude in their lives. And he was lonely. That was how he came to know the setter. It was white, its body flecked lightly with brown, and its legs and tail beautifully feathered. It belonged to the Wilsons, who had recently moved into the colonial house directly across the street. In the daytime, the setter waited through the long hours with brooding, forlorn patience. But when the two small Wilson children came home from school in the afternoon, he burst into life with a frenzy of joyous activity, waving his tail like a plume. In the evenings after the children had gone to bed, he lay quietly outside the door, lifting his head eagerly when someone came out, lowering it dejectedly when the person paid him no heed. Old Mark observed all this as he took the walks that were one of his small forms of pleasure, or when he worked in the yard. "The dog's lonesome, same as me," he would say to himself, and each day he would pause in front of the Wilson house and speak softly to the dog. The setter would lift his head in careful contemplation, his eyes wary. Once when Mark stopped, the setter crept toward him, then suddenly turned and went back to the house. In time, Mark learned that the children called the dog Ricky, and since he had never seen the setter enjoying a bone, he made it a point one day to ask Mrs. Wilson whether she minded if he occasionally brought one to Ricky. "Heavens, no," she said. "I'm afraid the children are the only ones who pay much attention to him. We wouldn't bother with a dog if it weren't for them." When she had gone back into the house, Mark unwrapped the bone he had brought. "You'll like this, fellow," he said gently. He laid the bone on the grass and went back across the street to work in the flower beds. The following day, when Mark Tyler went over, the setter came closer. Then finally, the day arrived when he carefully took a bone from Mark's hand. Still another day, when there was no bone, he let Mark touch his head briefly. As time went by, the setter began watching for Mark, his tail wagging, his eyes expectant. Slowly, shyly, they grew to know each other, keeping a reserved distance, as gentlemen should. One morning, as Mark set forth on his walk, he found Ricky close behind him. Unsure of his welcome, the dog waited. Then as Mark spoke to him, Ricky began running ahead happily, scouting the bushes. After that, they shared a daily excursion. Eventually, the setter began coming into the yard when Mark was working in the garden. His approaches were always tentative, as if he had often been repulsed. His amber eyes would search Mark's deeply as he waited for a friendly pat. Then, as if his joy could not be contained, he would race in mad circles until Mark coaxed him into quietness. One day, as Mark patted him, the dog lifted one side of his mouth in a painful sort of grimace. "By jingo," Mark said, laughing, I'd swear you're smiling at me. Little by little, the bond strengthened between the old man and the dog. Each was considerate of the other. Ricky, careful of the Tyler grounds, waited cautiously to join Mark. And Mark, now that the bond of friendship and respect had been established, never called to him. Ricky had a right to give of himself as he chose. Their friendship grew inevitably into love. Ricky's amber eyes lighted up when Mark came outdoors. He waved his tail madly or tugged at Mark's pants or rolled over and over in an ecstasy of joy. As for Mark, without his quite realizing it, his days took on new life and meaning. Ricky came often at night now, seeming to know the times when Mark was alone, just as he knew Mark's room, the one with the small porch adjoining, which gave Mark a private entrance to the house. The setter would lie on the mat in front of the door, or stand waiting until Mark became aware of him. He was aware that he wouldn't be invited to come inside, but if Mark came out and spoke soft, loving words to him, Ricky went home content. The love that Ricky gave to Mark was completely apart from the love he gave to the Wilson children. It was the love of a dog for his master, a master who spoke gentle words to him, gave him a bone now and then, took him for walks, and waited tolerantly while he made explorations or foolishly chased a low-flying bird. It had never occurred to Mark that Ricky might be taken away from him. The news came with stunning suddenness. First, word spread through the neighborhood that the Wilsons were moving to the country. Next, their house was sold, and then, one bleak day, the moving van came. The void in Mark's life those first few days was almost unbearable. "Uncle Mark, you're doing too much," Lucy told him as he worked ceaselessly at one small task after another. "Have to keep limber," he said, smiling. He didn't talk about Ricky's being gone. He didn't say that a man 80 years old learns to live with pain and disappointment. He said very little at all, and after a few days, he began taking walks again alone. It was on a night about 2 weeks later, an evening when Lucy and John were out, that he heard it, the soft scratching at his door. He waited, his heart pounding, not daring to believe his ears. Then the soft, familiar scratching came again, and with a sudden trembling joy, he went to the door and opened it. Ricky was weary and travel-worn, but his amber eyes were alight, and as Mark looked at him, he lifted one side of his mouth in the eager, homely smile. "You didn't forget," Mark whispered. "You've come back to me." But he knew this was not right. Though his hands ached to pat the setter's head, he held back. One rapturous welcome from him, and Ricky would be a tramp. The two of them could be friends, sharing loneliness, while the setter lived close by. But now his rightful home was miles away, and a dog so divided in allegiance was no dog at all. Perhaps he understood Ricky better than the Wilsons did, Mark thought. But the Wilson children loved the dog. Mark forced himself to remember Billy Wilson with his arms about Ricky, forced himself to think of Ricky hunting quail and pheasant on forest trails, and romping in wide open fields amid the excitement of country sounds and smells. As the dog whined softly and drew closer to Mark, the old man's heart was torn between joy and anguish. He drew back from the door and closed it. After a few moments, he went to the telephone. "I guess he missed your old house," he said, when he had Mrs. Wilson on the wire. "I thought I'd call before you worried." When Mr. Wilson arrived, Ricky still lay outside Mark's door, his eyes bewildered.
"What'll I do?" Mr. Wilson said gruffly to the dog. "Tie you up out there in the country?"
Except to say good morning and good evening, Mark had never talked to Mr. Wilson before. Now he said, "That's a fine dog. I know you got him for your children, but part of him needs you too, if you don't mind an old man telling you this." He paused a moment, embarrassed, and then went on. "Talk to him. Let him lie by your fire at night. Walk through the woods with him. Take him hunting. Get to know him and you'll never regret it. Two children, country freedom, a man for steadiness, that's heaven for a dog. Mr. Wilson listened. He had obviously been angry at having to make the long trip into town. But as he gazed at Mark and then down at the waiting dog, his expression changed. "I think you're right, Mr. Tyler," he said. "I hadn't thought about that." He reached down and stroked the setter's head. "Well, old fellow, how about going home?" he said. Ricky hesitated and then looked up at Mark, his eyes uncertain. With a hollow sense of loss, Mark knew it was over. He'd never see the setter again. "Go home, Ricky," he said with quiet authority. "Go home, boy."